Oh, what a weekend. Welcome inside the ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. Happy to be with you on this Monday, September 14th. What a weekend. I mean, there was literally something on for everybody, from English League soccer to NBA to NHL to NFL to racing, whether it was Formula One or IndyCar or NASCAR. I mean, there was a UFC event as well. There was a US Open tennis. My gosh, I just keep remembering something as I keep going. But a lot of sports going on this weekend, and it was hard to keep track of all of it. Of course, we'll talk a whole bunch of football coming up, but I wanted to start with the NHL and NBA. Since there wasn't a whole lot of action between those two leagues going on this weekend, obviously we had the series end between Boston and Toronto, which we'll get to here shortly. The Lakers eliminated the Rockets. We'll talk about Denver possibly doing it again for a second time this postseason, coming back from a 3-1 series deficit. No team has done that twice in the same postseason, come back from a 3-1 deficit. So the Denver Nuggets on the brink of creating some pretty incredible history. I mean, again, Utah was a very stout team. They were, you know, offensively, they were very good. Defensively, of course, having Rudy Gobert there in the middle. So that in itself was an impressive 3-1 comeback. But if Denver somehow manages to do it against the Clippers, one, that is going to be an unbelievable comeback for Denver. I mean, the one against Utah obviously was an eye catcher just from coming back 3-1. But to do that for a second consecutive series against a team, and this is no disrespect to Utah, but a team in the LA Clippers, which is far better than Utah, would be something even more just ridiculous for the Denver Nuggets. But that was an interesting series. Let's start on Friday. I mean, that's where we had the Nuggets in Game 5. Again, looking like they were going to be eliminated the way the Clippers had really dominated Game 1, 3, and 4 in this series. But the Nuggets just able to find a way, and they did it in the second half of both games. Game 5 and Game 6, the Nuggets didn't look great in the first half. And not that they looked awful against the Clippers, at least not in that first quarter. The second quarter, though, on Friday, LA was able to really kind of put some more breathing room in between them and Denver. And it looked like, again, going into halftime, that the Clippers were on their way just to kind of controlling the pace, playing their game, and just beating up on a Denver team that didn't look like they just really had anything left in the tank. And it kind of felt like that. I mean, Game 1, obviously, they're coming off that emotional series against Utah, but Game 2 seemed like the last time they were able to really show, you know, play their style of basketball and show us, you know, what they can do. And then Games 3 and 4 kind of seemed like how Game 5 started. You know, Denver playing okay basketball, but LA just being able to dominate on both sides of the floor. But then we got to the fourth quarter, and the entire game changed. And Denver, again, it just turned into a possession-by-possession game, and Denver just started winning every single possession. Not every possession, but they started winning more than LA was. And, I mean, that third quarter, you could start to see it turn and twist to the Denver's, into you know, the momentum swing go Denver's way. Then in the fourth quarter, I mean, they just ran away. They didn't run. I mean, they won by 6, but in terms of beating the LA Clippers, 38-25 is what Denver outscored LA in that fourth quarter. That is a monster end of the game. And again, just kind of saving their season. They were 4-0 at that point in elimination games this postseason. They made it 5-0 last night, or I should say yesterday morning. I think this game was at 10 a.m. yesterday morning. But Denver and LA again. Denver once again scoring 111 points in this victory, like they did Friday night in the Game 5 victory. And now here in Game 6 again last night, the Nuggets, again, I keep wanting to say last night, yesterday morning, again, the Nuggets with 111 points able to stifle LA again in that second half. The Clippers came out and had another solid first quarter, giving themselves an 8-point lead over the Denver Nuggets, then again kind of stretching that out a little bit there in the second quarter. And again, Game 6, the first half felt like Game 5. The Clippers, you know, Denver playing well, but able to win the possessions, run their kind of style of basketball, and just execute. And then we get to the second half, And again, the flip is switched from Denver. And they just start winning possessions. Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic. Jokic is having a fantastic series. I mean, he is. That was the big question mark I was wondering about coming into this series, was how is LA going to match up against Jokic? They really haven't done a good job of that. Throughout this series, when LA has gotten wins, it seems as though Jokic still having a good game. They're just taking everybody else out. They're making sure that no one else beats them besides Jokic. And then you get to game six. And again, Jokic leads the way in scoring with 34 points. He had 14 rebounds and 7 assists. He led the team in all three major categories there in this game. He's just having an excellent series. I feel like it was Jamal Murray there in the first series, obviously, with him and Donovan Mitchell going back and forth with those crazy games. And in this series, you know, Murray hasn't been as explosive as he was in that Utah series, but it's been Jokic that has stepped up and made sure this team has a chance. Not that, obviously, Murray or anybody else on this team isn't performing and isn't giving him some kind of help. I mean, Jamal Murray had 21 points there in Game 6. They also had 16 from guard Gary Harris as well. And they had two double-digit scorers coming off the bench in Michael Porter Jr. and then Monte Harris. Porter gave him 13 points and Morris gave him 10. So it's not just Jokic, but in terms of that leading role that Jamal Murray played in the series against Utah, Jokic has now taken over that role in this series against the Clippers, and it's been working. Because there just hasn't been anybody that can really, truly match up to Jokic yet on the Clippers. And now all of a sudden, here we are again. Game 7, anything can happen. And I would not be surprised, again, if the Clippers came out and put together a solid first half like they've done in games 5 and 6. But then when you get to the second half, when you get to that second 24 minutes, Denver just loves showing up. And they love making it interesting. They're now 5-0 in elimination games. I don't know how you bet against that. The only thing I can see now is the Clippers obviously trying to get that final win. I mean, the series clinching win is always going to be the toughest win of the series. And then when you are the Denver team, when your backs are against the wall, again, you really don't have anything to lose. You can go out there and play as hard as you want and you know, for lack of a better word, as reckless as you want. Whereas the Clippers are still trying to kind of contain themselves and get that fourth victory. But now all of a sudden, loser goes home. That's it. And anything can happen in a game 7. So I mean, I picked the Clippers to win game 5, didn't get it. I picked the Clippers to win game 6, didn't get it. So I don't know anymore. I have absolutely no idea how. I mean, it kind of feels like the Boston-Toronto series, right? Boston had dominated Toronto essentially the whole series, but Toronto just hung in there and forced a game 7. Same thing. It seems like from game 1 onward, even though Denver had a solid game 2 and great second halves in game 5 and game 6, it still seems as though LA has been the better team, yet here we are getting ready for a game 7 tomorrow night. It's just bonkers, but it is awesome. So I'm looking forward. I really don't know. And I don't have to make that decision of who I think is going to win until tomorrow, because that's when the game is. But I mean, I'm going to need all of today really to think about it, because I really don't know. I did not expect Denver to win 2 games, games 5 and 6 against LA. I mean, for one, the way LA was playing, and two, the first halves that LA had. I kept thinking, I mean, game 5, I had the same thought as I did in game 6. All right, well, there you go. They got their lead. They'll come out in the second half. They'll continue to play hard, but they'll just take it possession by possession, essentially manage this game to the end. Nope. All back comes Denver. So I have no idea how this series is going to play out, but man, has it been. I mean, really, these whole playoffs have just been insanely exciting and so unpredictable. And I just can't wait for game 7 tomorrow night. I'm bummed we don't have a basketball game tonight. Feels weird. It feels weird sitting here knowing that there's not going to be NBA on tonight. But you know, in a matter of weeks, after we have a champion crowned, we won't have NBA on for a little while. But nonetheless, enjoying it as we come down the stretch. A fun series here between Denver and LA now as they get set for their game 7. We had another game 7 on Friday, Boston and Toronto. Toronto again coming back, forcing a game 7. Here we are, anything could happen, and it was a tight game throughout, what you expect and hope that a Game 7 is. It wasn't, I think, as exhilarating as the Denver-Utah Game 7, but this was still something that had your eyes glued to the screen for the entire 48 minutes, and you couldn't look away. You didn't want to look away because it was just it was a great matchup. It was a fun game to watch, and I picked Boston. I was kind of pulling for Boston to get through there. I'm happy that they did. Nothing against Toronto, but I feel like this Boston-Miami conference final is going to be quite the show between two teams that have a lot of great guard play. And then obviously you got guys like Bam Adebayo down low for Miami. And the way that Daniel Theis has played for Boston, not so much on the offensive end, but defensively, I'm kind of hoping those two guys are paired up against each other. Because I'd love to see Bam Adebayo and Daniel Theis going at it underneath the basket. I think that would be a fun matchup. But Boston and Toronto in that game seven. The Celtics, Jason Tatum led the way, 29 points. Jaylen Brown also got over the 20-point mark. With 21, Marcus Smart and Kemba Walker, the other two Celtics in double digits. 16 from Smart, 14 from Walker. And Toronto, leading scorer, Fred VanVleet had 20 points. Kyle Lowry had 16. Pascal Siakam had 13. Serge Ibaka, 14 off the bench. And Norman Powell also 11 points off the bench. Pascal Siakam also 11 rebounds. But really, I mean, just hats off to Toronto. I mean, this was not a team that anyone really was giving a chance at the start of the season without Kawhi Leonard. They continued to show throughout that regular season that they can play strong team ball. They have guys in Lowry and VanVleet and Siakam that can step up and make big plays when they have to throughout the season. And really, throughout this postseason, they showed that they were a fighting team and that they weren't going to go down without a heck of a fight there at the end with Boston. I mean, forcing a game seven and fighting the way they did in that game seven. Obviously, they're going to be bummed not to at least make it back to the Eastern Conference Finals, let alone the NBA Finals. But I think this was a season that no one really saw for Toronto. And I think it's a season they can still be proud of with the fact that, again, no one gave them a chance, and yet they made it to the Eastern Conference semifinals and pushed Boston all the way to seven games. So I think that is a season that Toronto can still be proud of. But Boston, a couple of fun notes here, became the first team in NBA history to win, quote-unquote, four road games in one playoff series, which I don't know if we should really count that. I mean, essentially, they were the road team, technically, but it's a neutral court. I think there should be an asterisk by that. They won four road games, those road games on the same neutral court they were the home team on. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not so sure if I'm, if I'm Boston, I'm not sure if I'm, bragging about that to news reporters or friends or whoever. But nonetheless, they are the first team to win four games. I guess I should say this. They're the first team that's won four games as the road team in one playoff series. I guess that kind of makes it sound a little bit better. Either way, though. But interesting whether or not they'll get Gordon Hayward back, because he sprained his right ankle there in game one of the opening round series against Philadelphia. They said he was going to need 4 weeks. Well, tomorrow is 4 weeks. So, that maybe he's not back for game one of the Eastern Conference Finals that starts tomorrow, but the fact that he is, to that point, they're at that four-week mark, so maybe he misses game one, maybe game two, but if they get Gordon Hayward back for game three, that just gives Boston a whole nother dynamic to their team. He might not be a full 100%, but still, if he's out there and can shoot the ball, you got to think about Gordon Hayward, which could just give Boston a better place to be in that Eastern Conference Finals against Miami. Then an interesting stat for the Raptors, obviously because the coronavirus delayed a chunk of this season. Toronto was eliminated 456 days after winning the title last season, the longest such run for a team that didn't win consecutive championships. Just an interesting tidbit there. 456 days in between reigns, and they aren't celebrating a second championship. Just a little interesting tidbit. But now we look forward to that Boston-Miami series. And they had they played each other three times in the regular season. Boston won two of those matchups against Miami, 112-93 back in December, and then 109-101 at Miami on January 28th. Then they had one meeting inside the bubble during the seeding game process, and the Heat won that matchup 112-106. And an interesting situation for the Eastern Conference, as this will be the first time that the number one seed nor the number two seed has made it to the Eastern Conference final since the NBA went to this expanded 16-team format back in 1984. Of course, Boston being the 3 seed and Miami being the 5 seed. So this is the first time since that expansion that one of the top 2 teams in the East isn't playing for the Eastern Conference Championship. And there have been some similar matchups in the Western Conference since the NBA went to this playoff format. When number 3 Dallas beat number 4 Oklahoma City in 2011, of course, Dallas would go on to beat the Heat's legendary Big 3 in their first NBA Finals appearance that year. Number 3 San Antonio beat number 4 Utah back in 2007. And then number 3 Portland beat number 9 Phoenix back in 1990. But the last time anything like this happened in the Eastern Conference was 1969, when number 4 Boston beat number 3 New York in what was then the Eastern Division Finals. So again, a fair amount of history possibly being made throughout these playoffs, and it's fun to be a part of that. But Boston and Toronto had an incredible series, 92-87. Boston wins Game 7. They are off to the Eastern Conference Finals. And we know that the Nuggets or the Clippers, whoever wins tomorrow, will play the Lakers as they beat the Rockets 119-96. There in Game 5, eliminating Houston and winning the series 4-1. And really, I mean, the first and third quarters were so dominated by the Lakers that it really didn't matter. I mean, Houston technically won the second and fourth quarter, but looking at those margins in comparison to the margins the Lakers won in the first and third quarter, I mean, there really is no comparison, and that's what it felt like this whole game. It just felt like, unfortunately, Houston just didn't have that weapon that makes them the team they are, which is that three-point shooting. I mean, they went 13 of 49 in Game 5 against the Lakers. I mean, that's just 26% from beyond the three-point line, which if you're that Houston Rockets team, is not what gets you to victories. And that's really just hasn't been there this series. But L.A., like they did against Portland, lost Game 1, figured it out. They lost Game 1 to Houston and figured it out. They recognize that if they go to a smaller ball lineup, they are more talented than Houston when it's 5-on-5. And they didn't get a whole lot of help from Russell Westbrook in this game either, just scoring 10 points in 36 minutes. The biggest highlight from him was when he started jawing with Rondo's brother there on the sideline. That was about the most exciting thing Russell Westbrook did there in Game 5. So a bit of a bummer to see that series kind of fizzle out to really nothing after Houston had a strong Game 1 victory. But Lakers on their way to the Western Conference Final. We know that'll start on Friday, regardless of who they play. Game 1 of that series happens on Friday. But that was some of the action from the NBA over the weekend, from the world of the NHL over the weekend. On Friday, we had Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals between Tampa Bay and the New York Islanders. New York trying to avoid going down 3-0 in that series, and they did that with a very strong offensive performance. And just put the pressure on Tampa Bay, not from the get-go, but from the first goal, it was the Islanders pretty much in control. I mean, Kyle Clutterbuck got his second goal just about 13 minutes in, give New York a 1-0 win. Mikhail Sergachev came back about 4 minutes later to tie it up in the second period, owned by the Islanders with 2 goals, one from Adam Pelic, the other from Anthony Beauvillier, to make it 3-1 New York. Although Tampa Bay, of course, has a lot of talent. They have, you know, a lot of playoff success in the last few years, so they know how to respond, and they did coming out of that third period. Olaj Palat got his 7th goal on the power play to make it 3-2 just about 2.5 minutes in before Tyler Johnson tied it up at 3-3, but then Brock Nelson and Jean Pago led the way for New York. Brock Nelson scoring his 8th goal to put him at 4-3. Pageau then gets the empty netter there to make it 5-3 New York with just over 30 seconds to play there. But the Islanders fighting back. They made it a 2-1 series after that Game 3 victory. Then we got to Game 4 last night, and Tampa Bay responded with emphasis. I mean, no scoring there in the first period. Again, Brock Nelson scores for New York to get them on the board first, make it 1-0. Then Tampa Bay just said, okay, we're going to turn it on now. We're going to crank it up. We're going to flip that switch. We're going to make sure you don't get anything easy the rest of the game. They didn't. I mean, it was a great performance there from Sergachev in goal. And then Blake Coleman gets the goal about 15 seconds after Brock Nelson does to tie it up at 1. Then about 12 seconds after Coleman scores, Olaj Palat gets his 8th goal to make it 2-1 Tampa Bay. Then it was all Tampa in the third period. Braden Point scored to make it 3-1. Patrick Maroon scored to make it 4-1. And the Islanders just didn't really get anything else going later on in that game, especially in the third period. It was all Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay outshot. They had equal number of hits, but the faceoff circle is really what did New York in Game 4. The Lightning dominated the faceoff circle 34-21. That is a lot of possessions going Tampa Bay's way. And when you're trying to fight out of being down in the series, you got to get those chances on your side. And New York just did not do a great job of that. So Tampa Bay now on the verge of advancing with a 3-1 series lead. Dallas is in the same position after their game 4 on Saturday. They won 2-1 over Vegas with all the scoring coming in the second period. Again, some solid goaltending play by both teams. Anthony Martinez with a power play goal there in the second period to give Vegas a 1-0 win. Then Joe Pavelski and Jamie Benn, two stars for that Dallas team, ended up getting their 9th and 7th goals respectively to give Dallas a 2-1 lead. And in the third period, Anton Khudobin just did an outstanding job for Dallas there in goal. I mean, he has done a great job of really kind of stifling. And so with the Dallas defense, I mean, really, There have been times in this series where they've been a little discombobulated, but I feel like, for the most part, this defense has been way more organized than it was against Colorado. It's been a little more stout. And again, Khudobin's done a great job back there in goal for Dallas. So they won game 4, 2-1. They lead the series 3-1. And Dallas now with a chance tonight to advance to the West, to the Stanley Cup Final, excuse me, with a 3-1 lead. That game goes off at 5 o'clock tonight. And although I've struggled in my Eastern and Western Conference predictions, I just don't see Dallas winning 3 in a row against Vegas to knock them out. So while I think it's going to be a close game like Game 4 was, I think Vegas gets the win tonight and at least keeps their season alive for another game. And then we'll have Game 6 in that series. But I think Vegas wins tonight, keeps that series alive, and continues fighting there in the Western Conference Final. But that is pretty much what happened in the world of the NBA and NHL this weekend. When we come back from the break, we will take a look at the NFL slate week 1, essentially in the books with just 2 games left. We'll start taking a look at the Sunday action coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, it was white. Waking up on Christmas morning yesterday, just waiting for 10 a.m. to roll around so that first window of kickoffs on the first Sunday of the NFL season can get underway, and it didn't disappoint. A lot of tight games, a lot of good games, and just fun to have football back. I think that's what we were kind of feeling after Thursday night football between Houston and Kansas City. It was just good to see live football, safe, being done safely and being done still, providing entertainment and excitement for us. And no Friday or Saturday goes by slower than the Friday and Saturday in between the first Thursday night game and the first Sunday of the NFL season. It felt like that Friday and Saturday took forever to get through before we got to Sunday morning. But there was a busy slate going on yesterday morning. We had 9 games yesterday. Seahawks and Falcons in Atlanta. And I picked Seattle to win this game. They did, 38-25. What a performance from Russell Wilson. He led Seattle in passing yards and rushing yards for the 18th time in his career. I mean, obviously the passing yards isn't as surprising. Nobody else is throwing the ball. But for him to lead the team in that and rushing yards, I mean, that team, not to say, I mean, they've had some talented backfields in the past, but their backfield isn't awful. It's still got a lot of talent back there. And the fact that he was the leader in rushing yards only by 6, I mean, he had 29 yards rushing. Carlos Hyde had 23. So it's not like Russell Wilson was blowing the rest of the team away. I mean, only 84 yards on the ground, period, for Seattle in this game. I mean, their running game what we've seen in the past, and I think kind of what I expected. I've been a huge fan of Chris Carson for a long time, or at least for the last couple of years, and I've been excited to see what he can do in this offense. And I thought with Russell Wilson, Carlos Hyde, and Chris Carson, that offensive, that running offense for Seattle could be a little more amped up this season than what we've seen in the past. But nonetheless, I mean, 84 yards, did he get a touchdown that was scored by Carlos Hyde there on the ground? But Russell Wilson, really, 322 is what he threw for, 31 of 35 with four touchdowns. I mean, that's just the kind of performance I think we've expected from Russell Wilson. He is one of those top-level quarterbacks in the NFL, and even though Arizona and the Rams got wins this week too, Seattle, I feel like, still looked like the strongest team in that division here in week one. And a solid performance there from Seattle. And not a horrible performance either for Matt Ryan. I mean, 37 of 54, but he threw for 450 yards and two touchdowns. He's only sacked twice. So not a bad day at all for Atlanta, who looked a little bit sharper than I thought they were going to. Todd Gurley, 14 carries for 56 yards and a touchdown on the ground, the only rushing touchdown for Atlanta in that game. You know, I expected them at least to really rely on him, which they did. Nobody else even got close to the same amount of carries. In fact, only one other person got more than one carry, and that was Brian Hill, who had three, and they had four other players that had one carry each. But nonetheless, Todd Gurley, you know, we all thought he had a lot more in the tank. And I thought at least that he could give LA another dimension. He'll continue to add some weapons to that offense. And when Atlanta picked him up, I think it really helped a team that was lacking in run capability this season. And now that they have him in that backfield, it was a solid start. I mean, you hope to get more than 56 yards from him on 14 carries, only a 4-yard average. But still, in his first game coming back from the season that he had last year, dealing with some injuries and now being, you know, let go from L.A. and signed by Atlanta, I think that's a decent start for him. It's a start that can give Atlanta some hope moving forward, that you have a guy that scored a touchdown on the ground and, you know, wants the ball. And he wants to make plays, which is always a good thing to have in your running back. So I think Todd Gurley, the second there, gave Atlanta some hope in terms of their running game moving forward. Then Calvin Ridley. I mean, they had three receivers with nine catches. Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and then they also had Russell Gage with nine catches as well. Calvin Ridley with the two touchdowns, but Julio Jones caught nine passes for 157 yards. So strong receiving core there, at least between Jones, Ridley, and Gage showing up there in the first game. We'll see how they can build on that. I mean, Julio Jones making some ridiculous catches there in that game. But a strong performance from Seattle on the road there in Atlanta, 38-25, the winners. Then a game that I don't think would surprise a whole lot of people. I mean, Baltimore just running over Cleveland, 38-6. And again, Cleveland just looking like Cleveland. I mean, it was sloppy. It was just, the offense like a jumbled mess half the time they were out there. I mean, it was not a good look for Cleveland at all in this game. Not that we can be overly surprised. I mean, Baltimore is, you know, their offense seemed to pick up right where they left off. And, I mean, if Cleveland's going to get anything going this season, I feel like it's going to be a slow build. I mean, we're not going to see anything, rather, I don't think, too impressive from Cleveland for at least the first couple weeks of this season. And that was kind of a confirmation of that, with Baltimore rolling over him 38-6. Lamar Jackson now goes to 20-3 in his career as a starting quarterback. And again, just what a performance from the reigning MVP. 20 of 25, 275 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. He's also the leading rusher on the team, seven carries for 45 yards. As long as 16 yards. I mean, he is just the ideal dual threat in the NFL. Because I think his pocket passing last season got a lot better. I think it looked like either at that level or a little bit better in the game against Cleveland. So if he can continue to develop that pocket passing skill, Lamar Jackson is going to be an absolute nightmare for everybody in the NFL. I mean, more than he was last year, which is somewhat frightening, yet somewhat crazy awesome. But nonetheless, Lamar Jackson having a strong day there. Mark Ingram, 10 carries for 29 yards. And they're going to need a little more for him moving forward. But A strong performance from really the whole Baltimore team. You had Marquise Brown as well, Hollywood Brown, 5 catches for 101 yards in that game. Willie Snead caught a touchdown, and tight end Mark Andrews caught 2 touchdowns in this game from Lamar Jackson. But really just an overall strong performance there from Baltimore as they start the year off with the win, as did Buffalo. And Josh Allen became the first Buffalo quarterback with 300-plus passing yards since Week 16 of 2016. So, I mean, that just tells you, obviously, the QB struggles that Buffalo has had since then. But Josh Allen seems to be the real deal there for Buffalo. He had a solid season last year, helping him lead into the playoffs. And kind of like Lamar Jackson, where Josh Allen left off, seemed to have kind of picked up right from that. He was 33 of 46, 312 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. He had 14 carries for 57 yards and a touchdown. He doesn't really strike you when you look at him as somebody that could be a dual threat quarterback, but he's got some good legs. He's able to run. He's able to put some speed on those runs, and not that he's blown anybody away like a Lamar Jackson might be, but he's mobile enough to, again, make the defense have to think about it, which can open some stuff up down the field. And the Jets just, I mean, again, a team that has been playing great, just, again, not playing great. And the whole thing with Le'Veon Bell leaving was a huge bummer. Him getting injured, not what you want to see if you're a Jets fan. But Sam Darnold as well, just 21 for 35. I mean, 215 yards, he did have a touchdown, but he did have an interception as well. And there's not a whole lot there from New York. And they had some good offensive plays, but defensively, they just felt a step off. And Buffalo took advantage when they needed to, and showed themselves to be those competitors, I think, and contenders for that division that myself and some other analysts that are in there, or some other radio hosts or talk show hosts that are in the business here of media, kind of expect them to be. You know, they look like a team that has the pieces there, and they're looking like a team that can really start to contend for a division title, especially Stephon Diggs leading the way there with in receptions, 8 for 86 yards. He was targeted 9 times, so only 1 pass thrown his way did not get completed. But just a strong performance there, and John Brown also catching the touchdown for Buffalo. And just a strong performance from that Buffalo team all the way around against a Jets team that was scrappy at times, but just not good enough to really get over the hump against Buffalo. So a strong win there from the Bills, and a good win from the Raiders as well, as much as that hurts me to say. They went on the road to Carolina in what was a tight game. I mean, Vegas did have a 12-point lead at one point. But Carolina, you know, Teddy Bridgewater showing that he can be the guy. He can step up and be that starting quarterback if you need him. He had a solid game at home against the Raiders. It took him a little while, I think, to really get comfortable. But once he did, he seemed to really open up that offense. 22 for 34, 1 touchdown, only sacked 1 time. He ran 4 times for 26 yards. Of course, McCaffrey, 23 carries for 96 yards and 2 touchdowns. And it was a competitive game. It was a fun game. And one that I think the Raiders can feel really good about, going on the road to the East Coast and getting a strong win. And the Panthers, you know, with a brand new quarterback out there, a brand new head coach, I think besides getting a win, that was a really competitive first game out. And so I think that's something that they can be, you know, they're not going to be happy they lost, but I think it could have been a lot uglier in that game. So they made it competitive. They hung in there, and they took it down to the wire to only lose by 4 points. So I think that's a good start for the Panthers and a solid start for the Raiders as well. And then what a comeback between the Bears and the Lions. Trubisky, three-plus passing touchdowns in 4 straight games against Detroit. So he's had success. But down 20-6, I did not think Chicago was going to come back and be able to make a game of it. And they did. And that's not selling me on Trubisky at all right now. I mean, it was definitely, I think, one of the better performances that he's had against Detroit, or just period. I mean, to lead your team back down 14 to win 27-23, although Detroit had the win, they had it. If they didn't have a drop pass literally on the goal line that hit a receiver in the hands. Gotta catch those if you're going to try to win football games. But Chicago, a solid win. Trubisky really just stepping up. And I mean, it's going to be game by game for him to earn, I think, the respect back of a lot of those, or just to earn the respect period from a lot of those Chicago fans. But a solid start there from Chicago in that game, or really just into the season against Detroit. We'll see if they can build on that there after that game. But what a comeback win for Chicago. And Indianapolis and Jacksonville, this game had, I mean, the biggest surprise was the fact that Jacksonville looked as good as they did. I mean, Gardner Minshew, 3 passing touchdowns, tied a career high. Did not expect their defense to make some of the plays they did. I mean, I expected Jacksonville to arguably, I mean, be the worst team in the NFL after their offseason yard sale. I thought this was a team that is going to really struggle throughout this season. And I picked Indianapolis, and I just didn't, I don't think I thought it all the way through. Because Phillip Rivers, I thought, you know what, new team, maybe he takes a different approach, maybe this is kind of a fresh start that he's looking for. Nope, same old Rivers, throwing interceptions in the fourth quarter, throwing it deep in a double, triple coverage. Same old, same old. I'm just happy I'm not pulling my hair out watching as he's doing it for the Chargers. But nonetheless, yeah, if anybody out there from Indianapolis or that's an Indianapolis Colts fan was pulling their hair out in the fourth quarter wondering why Rivers was doing what he's doing, that's been my life the last 14 years. Or really, I guess the last like 5 or 6. I mean, they had some decent postseason appearances during that time. But nonetheless, that's the frustrating part there from Phillip Rivers. Then Packers, Vikings, strong performance there from Green Bay. A little bit of a slower start, as we saw from some teams, getting going here in week one. But, you know, Green Bay turned it on. Devontae Adams, 14 receptions, tied a single game franchise record. And you had to think that Rodgers, I mean, he wants to make a statement, so he's going to try to come out here and sling the ball all over the field, and essentially did that in the win there against Minnesota. So a strong showing from him. Also a strong showing from Cam Newton in his first year, or his first start as a Patriot in the post-Brady era. He ran for 2 touchdowns, which is tied most by a quarterback in a game in New England history. I have a feeling he could get a fair amount of quarterback rushing records for New England, seeing as how their last 20 years wasn't so much geared to that. But I think a strong performance. I mean, Miami trying to find a little Fitzmagic there when they made it 14-11. But New England, you know, Belichick, got to give him some credit. That team, I was worried about their defense. They made some stops when they had to, and they looked a little bit better than I thought. I thought they were going to really have to grind and scratch out a victory against Miami. But they managed to not comfortably get the win, but they looked a little bit more put together than I imagined them being. So a good start there for New England, and an awful start for Philadelphia. 17-0 lead, and they allowed 27 unanswered to fall there in the opener. I mean, you just can't do that if you're going to try to be a championship team. And for Philadelphia, I mean, I feel like if you know, I picked them to win the division partially because I thought, you know, it's going to be a toss-up between them and Dallas, but I thought Washington and New York just weren't going to have the camaraderie that Philly and Dallas would have moving forward. But, I mean, Philly just fell apart. After a 17-0 lead, they took their foot way off the gas, and Washington cranked their dial way up to 11. And, I mean, the Eagles just, I mean, really from the first quarter onward, just didn't look like the same team there against Washington. And, I mean, just hard to believe. I mean, 10-0, 17-0 was the lead almost halfway through the second quarter, and they just little by little fell apart. Can't do that if you're Philadelphia moving forward trying to win a championship. But that was the morning window, the first 9 Sunday games of the NFL season, and a mixed bag, but ultimately very entertaining. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take a look at the 3 afternoon games in Sunday Night Football and what went down last night. Coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, not as busy of an afternoon slate, which is usually how the NFL Sunday goes, but we still had 3 games. We had, of course, the debut of the number 1 overall pick in Joe Burrow with the Cincinnati Bengals, and not a bad showing either. I mean, I know he gave himself, I think, a D was his own grading on his debut, but It's a massive adjustment. Even if you play football in the SEC, it's still a massive adjustment moving to the professional level. Because, you know, the talent, it's way more of just the cream of the crop. You know, it's the top players that have risen to that level and play hard. So I know I think he may have been a little harsh on himself, but I still thought he made a pretty good debut. I mean, he had that incredible 23-yard touchdown run where he had the awareness to hold up and let his center set a block so he can run into the end zone. I mean, you think about young players making that adjustment, and that's something that some guys aren't going to be able to slow the game down enough to see in their first game. So the fact that he was seeing those kind of opportunities, I think, is still a good sign. Yeah, the interception was not the smartest throw. I mean, he tried, I think, a couple of those kind of shuffle passes throughout the game, and that's more of that college football, I'm going to make it happen any way I can type of style. And while that's fun, that doesn't pay off as much, unless you're like Patrick Mahomes who can do a no-look throw or throw with your left hand or whatever, which Joe Burrow might start to develop here. But otherwise, that kind of schoolyard type stuff doesn't usually find success in the NFL. And the first couple times, it was lucky enough just to get batted incomplete. The final time he tried it, Melvin Ingram was there ready to pick it off, which was a solid defensive play by Ingram there. I mean, really, I thought the Chargers defense looked good. I thought both teams were relatively competitive. They made it a fun and exciting game. The Chargers, again, kind of a slow start, a slow build throughout that game. Tyrod Taylor definitely looked like he needed that first half to really get settled into the offense. And in the second half, it looked to be a little bit more open. I mean, there was a lot of running up the middle there in the first half, which if it's working, great. But it wasn't producing the way that I think they would have wanted it to. And towards the end of the first half there, I was getting a little, irritated with how much they just weren't taking a chance. Let them throw it downfield a little bit. Let Tyrod Taylor kind of scramble. I mean, when he got on the move and was able to throw the ball down the field there in the second half, there was success that was found. So the Chargers now 3-0 all time against Cincinnati in week one games. And really, who knows how that would have gone if it went to overtime, had I'm blanking on the guy's name now, the kicker for Cincinnati, who had the calf strain there right at the end of the game. I mean, what a time to get a calf strain or pull a calf muscle, whatever it was. But what a time for that, as you're trying to go for the game-tying field goal to send your team into overtime, and Bullock pulls up as he cuts it right. And, I mean, it's unlucky for Cincinnati, but honestly, as a Charger fan, they weren't getting a whole lot of luck like that in their one-score games or one-possession games last season, going 2-9 in one-possession games. So I'll take a little bit of luck there to start the season. For the most part, though, you know, I thought the Chargers played well. I thought their defense played well. Joshua Kelly, the running back out of UCLA, with Austin Eckler having some injury issues in this game, I thought did a heck of a job stepping in, had the rushing touchdown there in the second half. So a good performance from him, and a solid performance from the Chargers there to get the win on the road. But really, I think a solid performance as well from the Bengals. I think the team that we saw last year, this team looked better than that team. Joe Burrow looks to be a quarterback that has already, really kind of settled in to an extent with this team. And I think he's going to get better as this season goes on. And it'll be interesting to see how Cincinnati can kind of keep themselves alive there in the AFC North. Then Saints and Buccaneers. New Orleans getting a strong 34-23 win over Tampa Bay. Tom Brady, two interceptions for the first time since week 16 of 2018. And although he did get the first score for Tampa Bay, that little one-yard QB sneak that he started getting known for there with the Patriots, able to do that, get his team on the board. But what did Gronkowski have? Two catches? Is that all he managed in this game against New Orleans here? Let me two catches. Targeted three times, just two catches for 11 yards. Not the Brady Gronk type of game we're used to, but a heck of a performance there from New Orleans, and that's why I picked him to win that division. I believe Terry did as well. They still seem like the top team there in the NFC South. We'll see how that continues to evolve over the season, but strong game there from New Orleans. And what a game from Arizona. 9-2 in the last 11 games against San Francisco. Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins is going to be an incredibly fun duo to watch this season, getting the strong 24-20 win over San Francisco and putting themselves in, you know, a tight fight there in the NFC West. I thought this was going to be a really interesting division to watch this year, and that result, I think, confirms that there's going to be some shakeups going on in that division. We'll see how it continues throughout the year. But nonetheless, Arizona, a strong win on the road. And San Francisco, like some teams, just seem to be a step or so off. Just not all in rhythm yet, which, you know, with no preseason, could happen. And last night, the Rams open up SoFi Stadium with a 2017 win over the Cowboys. Malcolm Brown, 2 rushing touchdowns, tied a career high, and just a solid game from L.A. holding on there at the end after a iffy offensive PI call there on Gallup for Dallas. But nonetheless, L.A. holding on, getting the win 20-17. Didn't look great, but they made the plays when they needed to, and they got away with the win there in the opening week of the season. So they start off 1-0, Cowboys 0-1, and that was the Sunday of football. What a week one it was. Fun to have the NFL back, and now we get to look forward to Monday night, the doubleheader, which starts in just a little over an hour. So we'll talk about that a little bit coming up after the break on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. We get set for a Monday night doubleheader between the Steelers and Giants first, kicking off a little after 4 o'clock. Steelers, 9 consecutive wins on Monday night. I think they make it 10 on the road at MetLife Stadium. Big Ben back for the Steelers. I think Pittsburgh comes out, opens up the season with a win. Then after that, about 7:15, 7:30-ish, the final game of week one, Titans at Broncos. And again, going with the road team. Just basically, you know, Tennessee coming off that impressive playoff run. We'll see if they can pick up where they left off. And we'll see how Drew Locke, who's 4-1 as a starter, if he can do anything for Denver. I mean, 2 fun matchups. I'm going with both the road teams, Pittsburgh and Tennessee, to get the victory. Enjoy the football. We'll talk tomorrow. Peace.